This is Sermon on the Mount, Message E on Peacemakers. I'm bringing you greetings from the Mediterranean island of Malta, which Christians are familiar with from Acts chapter 28. It's because Paul and those with him had a shipwreck here. Malta is in a strategic location. Above us is Sicily, to the west, very close to Tunisia, to the south is Libya. And it's difficult to get across the Mediterranean without coming close to Malta. So not surprisingly, this has been a place of a lot of conflict through the years. Now, Malta, which is the main island, and the other small islands have been inhabited for a long time. I mean, thousands of years, even before Christ. But it's been fought over, and it's been conquered by the Phoenicians, the Carthaginians, the Romans, the Greeks, the Vandals, the Ostrogoths, this is incredible. The Arabs, of course, the Normans, the Aragonese, the French, the British, and the history and the language are very complicated and multi-layered. It's a beautiful place to be. But it reminds me, it is a place of conflict. When we flew here last night, the passenger next to me, my wife was in the row behind me, but the guy next to me, he actually has lived here 85 years. We had a great talk. I think you would enjoy this place. Well, how does that tie into the next beatitude? Well, because the beatitude is, blessed are the peacemakers. And this is a place that has been very much in need of peace, a place of conflict and war through much of its history in the last 5,000 or 7,000 years. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Matthew 5:9. I'll admit, when I was a young Christian, that was my least favorite beatitude. Partly because it didn't seem, manly. There are passages about compassion and love and gentleness and kindness. And for many men, we tend to think of those as maybe more important for women, which is nonsense because these all describe Jesus. But we also tend to gravitate towards the rougher, more challenging passages. So in Matthew, I liked Matthew 10:34, because there Jesus said, I did not come to bring peace, I came to bring a sword. And he speaks about division and the things that happen as a result of our following Christ. So passages like this one, Matthew 5:9, blessed are the peacemakers, I thought, well, that doesn't really apply to me. And so obviously I would not spend much time meditating on it. To make peace is to pacify. To pacify. It's something active, not passive. It's not doing nothing. It's doing something. It's just not using violence. It's using your head. It's using your heart. In the Old Testament, I think of the old woman, the wise old woman of Abel in 2 Samuel, who prevents her town from being destroyed. I think of the apostles. There's a lack of peace in the church. There's an ethnic divide in Acts chapter 6, and they make peace by giving the solution to those who are most invested, and so they have harmony in the church. I thought of James, the brother of Jesus, who heads up the Jerusalem Council in Acts 15. Each side prevents a viewpoint, everyone listens and talks about it, and eventually they arrive at a solution, perhaps a compromise. Now, when we talk about the church being pacifist, a lot of people get very confused. After all, don't we sing songs like Onward Christian Soldiers? Well, interestingly, for its first 300 years of existence, the church was pacifist. Not pacifist, that is being passive, distant, uninvolved, uncaring, nonchalant, but the church was active. And because they realized that fear and anger, greed, these are the kinds of things that are the real causes of war. They're the things in the human heart. Justin Martyr, a famous second century Christian, told this to the Roman emperor. More than all other men, we are your helpers and allies in promoting peace. So Christians were very involved, relationally, also through prayer, in seeking peace. Now, of course, they're not always successful. Even if we do our best to be respectful and gentle and diplomatic, some will still consider us Christians to be troublemakers. I mean, if they rejected Jesus, he said, they'll reject us. That's in John 15:18. Here's another great second century quote. Actually, first century quote, sorry. This is Tertullus. This is the lawyer who's accusing Paul when they're before Governor Felix. And he says about Paul, the apostle, "We have found this man a plague." A plague? "One who stirs up riots among all the Jews throughout the world and is a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarene." So that's in Acts 24. Now, Paul was not a troublemaker, though trouble tended to follow him because he spoke the truth. So, I mean, the ultimate goal is not just harmony or even unity. It's truth, lovingly presented, but it's the truth of God. It's God's message. And that's why Paul said in Romans 12, "If possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all." Well, let's talk about application. What does this great beatitude mean to us? First, let's not actively seek quarrels or behave insensitively or sow seeds of dissension. That is, we say things to one person and they say things to other people that will end up causing them to turn against each other. Proverbs talks about that as well, back in Proverbs 6. But we need to seek peace and pursue it. Followers of Christ take no pleasure in controversy, in proving other people wrong. I realize that when we play games or sports, we try to win. Some of us are more competitive than others. That's not really what I'm talking about here. We're talking about putting people in their place, making them look bad. And so we don't want to quarrel. And this has implications for politics. It's why most politics, it's a dirty game, which Christians cannot be involved in, except maybe in some exceptional circumstances. It has cultural implications. Actually, being a peacemaker has doctrinal implications, right? Because not all Christian teachings are central or essential. Some are more important than others. This has doctrinal implications. If we divide over important issues, but they're not actually central gospel issues, that doesn't say much about us to the watching world. So first, don't actively seek a quarrel. Secondly, let's reject groups that promote violence. Reject ideology that promotes violence. Jesus was a peacemaker. There's that famous passage in Matthew 26 where he says, "Put your sword back in its place." You know, all who draw the sword, all who take up the sword will die by the sword. He refused to use violence. Third, when leaders, and I refer here to Christian leaders, but I suppose it could be anybody, when they behave egotistically or in ways that are actually damaging Christian unity, we need to speak up. So, for example, Jesus intervened when his own apostles were getting arrogant and they were jockeying for position. Can I be on your left? Can I be on your right? I want to be the man. I want to be in a special and honored place. He intervenes, and you'll see very clearly how strongly opposed that. I thought of John. In the little letter of 3 John, Diotrephes loves to be first, and he can't stand people who are collaborative, right? So John writes a letter and actually mentions his name. I think of Paul speaking up when the behavior of the Apostle Peter was going to create disunity. This is in Galatians 2:11, where Peter is taking the side of prejudiced Jewish Christians by withdrawing from Gentile Christians. That was not good. So sometimes, for the sake of unity, we need to say some things that may be hard to say. See what I mean? Passivism is, it's being a peacemaker. It's not passivism, being passive, doing nothing. I think we need to expect and allow a certain level of disagreement. Because sometimes good-hearted Christians, intelligent Christians, will have a different view. In 1 Corinthians 1, Paul is not calling for uniformity of thought. He's calling for unity of heart. That's 1 Corinthians 1:10. So we need to watch ourselves, because peace is ruined when we insist on our own way. This is extra hard to get the balance, to figure it out, because in our modern time, people who are confident of their position are often portrayed as arrogant or tyrannical or unloving. They're hurtful. the issues are not so much, let's talk about what's true and figure that out. It's more, are you honoring my feelings? You know, am I putting things just the right way? 100 years ago, a public intellectual named G.K. Chesterton put it this way. Bigotry is, it's not bigotry to be certain we're right. But it is bigotry to be unable to imagine how we might possibly have gone wrong. I like that because it reminds me I can have conviction. And even on things that are not that important, I could believe I'm right. But to not be able to imagine that I could be wrong, that's bigotry. So there's no room for discussion or thoughtful reflection or reconsideration. Jesus, next, he expects us to work through disagreement. And this is quite clear when we've got that kind of friction from things he says later in this chapter, Matthew 5, and also what he says in Matthew 18. We also need to do some personal work, because often conflicts between people are the overflow of unresolved issues or unresolved conflict in your or my heart. Does that make sense? I like the way Jessica Robleski put this. I love this quote. If most of us are honest with ourselves, we know that there are many ways in which our hearts are not at peace. We are wounded, insecure, resentful, and lonely. And this restlessness within us causes us to anxiously defend our actions and opinions. It causes us to control others and to seek their love and praise at all costs. So the real place where we need to be the peacemakers is the heart level. And that's what God always cares about. In the Old Testament, in the New Testament, it's the heart. We have personal work to do. It also has implications for a church. Because Colossians 3:15 says, let the peace of Christ rule. You know, let it reign among you. 3:16 is the famous passage, let the word of Christ dwell in us, live in us richly. But the verse before, it's not talking about my heart. It's talking about the church itself, that there should be peace in the church. And of course, that's going to happen when we have peace in our own hearts. And so I think the challenge is to demonstrate the peace of Christ in our hearts, in our own Christian commitment, in our communities as we interact with neighbors, and in the Christian community. The next beatitude we'll look at is blessed are the persecuted. It's one that is not so obvious, not so intuitive, but we'll be looking at that in iFaith message F. But that's all my thoughts on peacemakers. Hope you have a great day. And I will too here in the Mediterranean island nation of Malta, where Paul was shipwrecked. What a place. God bless you, and we'll see you soon.